The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
This showed up. This is Danny White's book. I was so excited to get this when I heard that Danny had finally written the book and that his daughter is involved in this project. I said, well, I got to get him on. So from Vernon, Arizona, that's where you are right now, right? You're at the cabin.
No, I'm not. I'm at the cabin. I'm at Red Cabin Ranch, Arizona.
Red Cabin Ranch, Arizona.
Red Cabin Ranch, Arizona. It's 8 miles out of Vernon.
Okay.
I'm not going to tell you which direction out of Vernon because then I'd have to kill you. This is my favorite place in the world, Brad, and I get up here every chance I get. It is Red Cabin Ranch, and it's just a little island out in the middle of the National Forest, and we were lucky to come across it, and so here I am.
I am lucky enough to say that I sat with Danny on a rock at Red Cabin Ranch. And
yes, you did.
Did some television back then, and there's a big old lake, and there were birds flying around and fish jumping, and it was great. Let's talk about this. Why now? Why this book? Why with your daughter?
My kids finally wore me out, Brad. I've been telling stories my whole life about things that happened on and off the football field, and they just finally, they kept saying, Dad, you've got to write a book. You've been blessed with opportunities that not many people get to have. Living in the fast lane, being a celebrity, America's team quarterback, and you know, not a lot of people dream about that, but not many people get to actually do it. And you know, it finally got to me, you know, they're right. And I think I just feel an obligation to share some of that. And if it helps one person that's struggling with depression, doesn't feel they're worth anything, feels like God has abandoned them, then it'll be worth it. And I hope it does. That's the point of the book, is that it doesn't matter whether you're at the top of the ladder in terms of temporal success, famous, rich, all kinds of toys, or at the bottom, struggling, you know, just doing the best you can. God doesn't love one any more than the other. And hopefully that's the point.
The book is Spotlights and Shadows, Danny White, with his daughter. The title. Why that title?
You know, Heather came up with that title, and she just, it was like an epiphany that she had. And I'm the spotlight. You know, when you're America's team quarterback, you're not just under a microscope. It's an electron microscope. And it's not just a spotlight. It's a super high density light. I guess I'm the spotlight part. She's the shadow part. The neat thing about it is she has developed into a life coach, certified life coach.
Mm.
She's a concert pianist. She's got a beautiful singing voice. She's an artist. She has her own website where she sells her paintings. So she's just a really talented girl. And what I've found out writing this book is she's a talented writer.
Hmm.
And I have read this book now 4 or 5 times, and I just skip over my stuff. and because she has stuff that applies, that's meaningful. I'm the dancing chicken, right? She's the stuff. She's what you go to listen to get better. And so I'm excited about this book for that reason more than anything else, Brad. And that's for Heather to get her thoughts out there for people to learn from, to benefit from. And it's based off of stories that I tell, things that happen to me that make a point. There's a lesson there to be learned, and she teaches the lesson, and it's unique in that respect. I don't know if there's ever been a father-daughter combination, professional celebrity football players and a daughter certified life coach. That combination might just be pretty volatile. We'll see.
Arizona State Sun Devil legend Danny White, Dallas Cowboy quarterback Danny White, and punter, of course, Valley Home Hero Making Good. The book, Danny White, is now out, Spotlights and Shadows, for a few minutes. The hard part about doing book interviews for me through 40 years of doing this is you don't want to give away the book. You like to have people go buy a few of these. So I'm not going to go too deep into top to bottom. But Danny, there's things in here that I learned about you that I think any Sun Devil fan or Dallas Cowboy, if we're just going to use the sports side for a minute, you went on a date with the lady that you married, and you don't really remember the date because you're in high school because you got concussed playing football Westwood High School.
That's right.
Right? I mean, I'm reading this, and I'm saying, there's no way. He doesn't even remember the date. And it was a first date, and it was
homecoming.
It was homecoming, and you got dinged, you got hit in the head, and you got hit in the head so hard you ended up marrying her. So it must not have been all bad, right?
yeah, best concussion I ever got. My own guy. I go up to make a tackle. I was playing defense, and my own guy, his foot swung around, hit me in the side of the head, and knocked me out. Knocked me out cold. I missed the rest of the season. I went home, sat on the couch, watching TV. The doctor told me not to drive, tried to stay awake. So I'm sitting there watching TV, and my mom comes in and says, Danny, didn't you have a date with that new girl tonight? I said, Mom, I have no idea. She was brand new. Her family had just moved in right behind us, and met her at church, and didn't really meet her, but yeah, saw her at church.
Sure.
And Jolene was not a football fan. She didn't even go to the game. She didn't know that anything had happened to me. So Mom goes in and calls Jolene's mom and said, did Danny have a date with Jolene tonight? She said, yeah, she's sitting here in her nice formal dress, all ready to go to the dance, which is over now. And Mom came in and said, I don't know what she said, but I got dressed. My dad drove me around the block. We picked her up. We drove down to Bob's Big Boy on Main Street in Mesa.
There you go.
Went in and got a hamburger while my dad waited in the parking lot. And went out and he drove us home. And according to her, she kissed me goodnight that night. I can't prove her right or wrong. I don't know if she's lying. She says I went in and met her whole family.
Don't remember.
I must have done something right, said something right or something, because, the rest is history, as they say.
But you don't remember any of it.
Woke up the next morning and didn't remember anything for a week. The whole week before that, I didn't remember anything that had happened.
Wow.
And yeah, who knows,
These are the types of stories, okay, that I learned a lot on. And there's a lot on the Cowboys. And, of course, with the Cowboys, America's team, a different space than, I'll take a little shot at the Cowboys, they actually won championships and actually went to Super Bowls. Okay, there's my one shot at the Cowboys because they did it. They're not doing that now. But, the relationship with you and Roger Staubach is talked about in this book. I think that for a Cowboy fan, like you were talking about playing ping pong against him. And I think little stories like that actually are bigger stories because they explain a lot more about the person and the personality. If you could go down that path.
Yeah, Roger, everybody talks about how competitive he was. And I'm a pretty competitive guy, too. He's a little more outward in his competitiveness. He doesn't hide it. And The first time I saw that firsthand was in the lounge in our dorm at California Lutheran College.
Sure.
It was called back then. And in the dorm, I don't know, one of the first few nights at training camp, and there was a ping pong table, and Roger was playing ping pong, and I've grown up playing ping pong with my dad in the backyard, and boy, there were lots of times when I would frustrate my dad to the point that I would see ping pong paddles flying off into the dark off of our patio at night. And Roger, I think Roger just, no, I'm a little rookie, you know, his backup. And I think Roger probably didn't expect that I was a good ping pong player, but I beat him. I don't know if I beat one, two out of three. I just beat him one game, and it was one of those games where he was ahead, and I came back and beat him. And he stuck that ping pong. I don't know if it stuck, but it hit the wall pretty hard, and it shocked me. But I just saw the competitiveness in Roger Staubach for the first time that night, and saw many times since. The Red Coke Cup, one of my favorite stories of he and I bench pressing. There were lots of things that we did. We got along real well together, but we were also fierce competitors.
Sure.
He would not play me in racquetball because Roger would not do something if he wasn't pretty sure he was going to win. And I was a better racquetball player than him. Basketball, pretty close. The Red Coke Cup was bench pressing, and do I say you've got to get the book to find out the rest of
yes,
the story?
Yes, you do. You do. I'm not going to give it away.
Because yes,
this is where you lay it up here. Here's the book.
I've never done this before, Brad, but there's a Red Coke paper cup involved. He and I would work out together. We'd train, we'd lift weights.
Yeah.
And we were bench pressing one day, and that Red Coke cup came between us. Roger and I were the kind of competitors, but the kind of friends that never let stuff on the field carry off the field, because we had very similar beliefs, family and faith. And Roger always kept football in its place, believe it or not. And hopefully there's some examples in this book of the way both Roger and I were able to manage success on the football field without letting it become more than it really was, because you can't take football with you. Football, Super Bowl rings and money and nice houses are not things you can take with you. And that comes out, I hope, in the book, and that we all spend way too much time developing replaceable talents, like throwing a football, versus permanent talents. For me, playing the piano comes out in the book. That was a big deal.
Yes, it was.
My mom was brutal. She was brutal. She would come out on the street and get me and drag me in when I was out there in the huddle getting ready to score a touchdown. And because we had a deal, I had to practice the piano for 30 minutes every day after school before I could play ball. Now, how much discipline do you think I had to develop to sit at the piano and look out the window and see those kids playing ball? And here I am practicing the piano. Well, and I became, in 8 years, 8 years of formal piano lessons, I became a pretty decent piano player. And to this day, I play almost every day. But I don't throw footballs anymore. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting. Yeah.
I spent 99.9% of my life learning how to throw a football. and 0.1% learning how to play the piano. Which one is permanent and which one is replaceable? You know, so things like that. Things like that.
Danny is going to be at Via Luna on Friday night, this coming Friday, and he'll be there at 6 p.m. with the book. You'll have a chance to meet him. He'll be on the back patio of Via Luna, the National Football Foundation, Bill and Janie Riddle putting it together. Danny White, Spotlights and Shadows. When Tom Landry would call you, and I'm not, again, I have very few stories I want to weave in and out, but when Tom Landry would call you the night before a game, I think that's a story that Cowboy fans and just football fans, this is not cell phone, hey, text me, I got something.
Right.
Tom Landry calls you the night before a football game. What did that mean to you? What were you expecting once it's like, yes, coach?
It's one of those things that looking back on my life, Brad, I realize how special that was, because there's only, to my knowledge, there are only two of us that ever got those phone calls. He started doing it while Roger was the quarterback. Mm-hmm. He continued doing it when I, and it was only the starting quarterback. It wasn't the backup, which hurt my feelings a little bit when it was Roger. Hmm. And so, because Roger, when I'd have to go to Roger on game day, say, hey, Roger, what did Coach Landry go over with you last night? Because I might have to know, you know, you never know.
Sure.
He would go over everything with me, and that, it bothered me a little bit that he didn't call Roger. But the phone calls were not your typical, how you doing? It's Saturday night. How's the family? Are you guys? It was pick up the phone. Hello, Dan, you know, on that, toss 37 switch, if they go to a Frisco stack defense, we gotta get out of it and go to 36, right? Okay. Click. Dial tone.
And the point of it was he's thinking about you, right? I mean, he couldn't turn it off, right? Night before a game,
The whole day before the game, you know, he's busy all week doing other stuff. And the day before the game was his chance to really sit down and watch film and digest it. And he would always see things. I did the same thing as a coach. Same exact thing. The day before, I did the same thing with his book. I'm still calling Heather. Heather, I got another story. Too late, Dad. It's too late.
It's published.
I wore her out with these last. I've got another one now, my Bart Starr story. That's not in the book. I have another one about the catch, the championship game against the 49ers. That's not in the book. We had to print an insert, Brad. You don't even have it.
What?
We had to print an insert that we're going to hand out that people can stick in the book, and we'll tell them what pages to stick it in. It's my take on the catch, but more than the catch, it's the two plays after the catch.
Yeah.
That were probably the two biggest plays of my career. And there, it wasn't even in the book. And Heather, I'm just driving Heather crazy. So back to this, I'm getting way off.
No, it's fine.
Coach Landry would come up with last minute changes. But he was not a buddy, how's the family, socializing kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was all business, especially on Saturday night or the night before the game. This was one of those times, and it was classic. I mean, I don't know of another coach, and Cowboy fans, I don't think even know about it, because I've never heard Roger talk about it. And he and I are the only ones that even know that it happened. So this is the kind of stuff I've got to get down on paper, or it'll just disappear. But sometimes it'd be more than one call in the night, you know, because he'd have other things that would come up. And then the next day I'd have to get with the other quarterbacks, you know, and hey, here's Coach Landry talked about this last night. But then he stopped doing it. Probably mid 80s. yeah, that's one of the stories in the book that was just classic Tom Landry. And there's not a point to it, just something that the Cowboy fans, I think, will enjoy.
Sure. How did Frank Kush prepare you for Tom Landry? Forget about football for a minute. How did one coach prepare you for the next coach?
Well, it was all about discipline. You know, there's a right way and wrong way to do things. Frank Kush did it with physical, with humiliation, he didn't have the advantage of money. Coach Landry would just fine you. Coach Landry never got mad. I got fined one time in 13 years. It was because I got stuck behind a semi that turned over on the freeway and stopped all the traffic. And I ended up being 5 minutes late. I called ahead, talked to Marge. I said, Marge, I'm out here on the freeway. I'm stuck. And this is like 30 minutes. I had a 45-minute drive one way to the practice field. So I said, Marge, I might be a little late. I'm stuck. Okay, I'll tell Coach. So I get there 5 minutes late, and sure enough, on Friday, there's a $100 fine in my check. And I, wait a minute. And I, you know, so I went into Coach Landry. I said, Marge, can I talk to Coach? Coach, I called ahead. I told you what had happened. I had no choice. I would have been early had it not been for Dan. Were you late? I said, well, yeah, Coach, but the semi turned over. Dan, were you late? I said, well, end of discussion. You know, that was Tom Landry, and that was Frank Kush. And it didn't matter who you were. They just did it in different ways. Coach Kush was a yeller and a screamer and a humiliator. Tom Landry, in 13 years, I never heard him raise his voice. Ooh, that's something I didn't talk about in the book.
Here we go. Here's another chapter.
Oh, see, I'm
Baller now.
In 13 years, Brad, I never heard Coach Landry raise his voice. Now, I don't know how many NFL quarterbacks you can say that about. Someone asked Walt Garrison if he ever saw Coach Landry smile, and Walt said no, but I'd only been there 9 years. So he wasn't sure. Just different ways of bringing out the best in a football player. Mm-hmm. And on the first page, here's another one. On the first page of the quarterback manual, the three most important words in the development of a quarterback are, you want to guess what they are, Brad, or should I say you got to get reading?
You got to get the book. It's not in the book.
It's not in the book.
So you can go ahead and use it.
I got to get another insert. I got to make another insert. The three most, now everybody's wanting to know, what in the world? What are the three most important words? No, it wasn't even three, it was two. What are the two most important words in the development of a quarterback? Encouragement and praise. Now, I don't think Frank Kush wrote a book and said anything close to that.
Yeah.
Because encouragement and praise were humiliation and embarrassment. And he would get you in front of the whole team and but he did it to everybody. So everybody could relate, and it brought us all together. We were all united in our battle against Frank Kush. That's how he united us as players. And it sounds a little bit strange, but it worked. And I mean, we were too slow, too small to beat anybody.
Too soft.
I don't know about soft. I mean, we had some guys.
I mean, coaches would use that. I've heard coaches use that term, so I'm just wondering if he ever used that term. Coaches, you guys are soft. You're going to get beat up.
You know? I don't think we were, but he told us we were.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And here's a story that's in the book. The last play, the Fiesta Bowl, the first Fiesta Bowl, the play that won the game for us. This is historical, because I changed the play that Frank Kush sent in and ran a different play. And the press after the game couldn't believe, they heard from somebody, one of the other players, that I changed the play in the huddle and called something different. And it's true. But it was not my idea. Mm-hmm. And I took credit for it. I took credit for it at the time, but in the book, I tell the rest of the story and what really happened. And I have to fess up before I die. This is deathbed repentance.
Yeah,
is
yeah.
What this is. Before I die, I have to give credit where credit's due. There was somebody else that was responsible for that play being called. And now you got to get the book.
Now it's in the book. Danny White, Spotlights and Shadows. A couple other things I'll get you out of here. What do you make of the present day Arizona State Sun Devils football program?
I think the present day people, I hope, time will tell. But I think they're doing everything they can do.
Mm-hmm.
But they're so deep down in this hole that it's going to take some time and some patience on the part of Sun Devil fans and the media. Because Kenny's got a mountain in front of him, and he's a good guy, and I like Kenny. And I'm pulling for him. And I can't say that about the previous administration, but I can say that about Kenny because I think his heart's in. I think he's going to do it the right way, do the right thing, do it the right way. And that's what's important. Maybe even more than winning right now is that it gets done the right way. It gets built with the right kind of people in the locker room, in the coach's office. And I think so far, so good. I think they're on the right track.
One other thing. So you and I have known each other for a long time, back to the Rattlers when I got here in 93, 94. The changes in athletic directors, the constant change in athletic directors, I've gotten to the point where I refer to Arizona State University as always something university, ASU, because they just can't seem to get out of their own way. And I'm willing to give their new athletic director a chance. I just don't know, Danny, if the perception around town is reality and that Michael Crow doesn't care about athletics. The doctor has done great things with the university, but the track record doesn't lie about the number of ADs and coaches and scandal and lack of facility with the basketball arena, still 50 years of age and dilapidated in a lot of areas. I'm curious if you see it a certain way about Arizona State athletics.
Well, I've sat in front of Dr. Crow and I've seen the competitiveness come out of him. Either he is a great actor or he is seriously competitive and wants to win as much as anybody. I just don't know that athletics has been as high on his priority list as I would like to see it, as fans would like to see it, because he has so much going on at that school and mm-hmm. has done such an incredible job building other aspects of the university, turning it clearly into a world-class university, just not athletically. And that's a personal thing with me and my family, and with a lot of other people too. Me personally, I just have to try to see it from a different perspective, a different viewpoint, because if I base it purely on my love of ASU sports and athletics, then I would say something that I would regret later,
mm-hmm.
because my mom told me, if you can't say something good, don't say it at all. And I don't have a lot of good to say. I think the effort's been there. I think the concern and the care is there. It just hasn't been followed up with the right kind of decisions. I would love to have been involved. I would love to have been more involved with ASU athletics somehow, some way. And I know there are a lot of former athletes from ASU, golfers, baseball players, basketball players, football players, that would love to have been more involved. And if I can say one thing that I think they could have done a lot better, it would have been to involve the alumni and the former players more in decision-making and developing those programs, because we're out here ready to help any way we can possibly help. Nobody's ever asked. That hurts a little bit.
Sure, sure. And I know that you and I have had conversation back when coaches' jobs were open for you. You've shown up. You've been there at practices from, you know, all of them, Cutter to Todd to a little bit with Herm and now Kenny. And I feel like I'm with you on Kenny. I hope that he has the resources and the help, and that just isn't another stepping stone or another 3 or 4 years from now, or there's something behind door number 5 from the NCAA. Just some smooth sailing would be nice. That's all.
Yeah.
Just yeah. Nice. Look, this book is great. This book is great.
Thanks, Brad. Thank you.
You'll be at Vi Luna on Friday night on the back patio, and you'll still be adding pieces to this book, it sounds like.
Who knows when this book will be done? I don't know. I don't know how many revisions.
Revisions, right.
I just had two right now sitting here thinking, talking to you. Yeah. So now I got to call Heather.
Call Heather.
She's probably not going to take my call.
It's Dad again. He's got another story. Oh my gosh. What are we going to do here? I'll let you go off that. Enjoy the outdoors, and I appreciate your time, Danny. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad. It's been great.
That's Danny White, and we're back with more after this timeout.